Welcome to Jury Duty. I'm your host, Chris Terracone. Season 8 of Jury Duty explores the trial of Alex Murdoch, a member of one of the most powerful families in South Carolina, who is accused of murdering his son Paul and his wife Maggie, with the purpose of covering up a multitude of alleged crimes, including fraud and homicide. In our last episode, we concluded our review of John Medder's direct examination of Blanca Simpson, a longtime friend of Maggie Murdoch who also worked for the Murdoch family. We also began our presentation of Dick Harpootlian's cross-examination of Ms. Simpson. In this installment, we conclude our review of Ms. Simpson's testimony. That's all coming up right after the break.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
It is the late morning of February 10th, 2023, day 13 of the trial of Alex Murdoch. As we concluded our last episode, Prosecutor John Medders posed a series of objections to defense attorney Dick Harpootlian's cross-examination of Blanca Simpson. Ultimately, Judge Clifton Newman decided to excuse the jury to address Medders' objection. As we begin this installment, the jury has left the courtroom and Judge Newman asks Dick Harpootlian to restate the question to which the prosecution is objecting.
Okay, what is the question?
When you were talking with him in the little house in August, as we were talking about a moment ago, and he was talking about the shirt, did he tell you that he had just been interviewed by Swed, who'd shown him the Snapchat photo, and he was attempting to figure out what he was wearing that day? I mean, it's in a photo. Did he tell you that?
What's the specific question?
Did he, when he asked you the question about the shirt, did he tell you he'd just come from being interviewed by Sweat?
No, sir, he didn't tell me that.
And what is the objection?
Prosecutor Medders rises to make his argument.
Your Honor, it's hearsay. Statement is hearsay, that if he wants to do that, he can take the stand and do it. But he's trying to offer the defendant's statement without him taking the stand. It's offered for the truth of the matter asserted. That's my objection.
All right, and your response?
My response is, if you can't ask witnesses about what the defendant said to them, you're going to have a rough road to hoe going forward, because it's a statement by the party opponent, if you will. I think they argued earlier on when we objected to one. It's not hearsay. There's an exception to hearsay by a statement by one of the party. It's Alex.
Statement by the party opponent, being a statement by the party opponent, the defendant.
Mr. Murdoch's statement to this woman.
This matters. I've been doing this 35 years. He's on trial.
We know that.
But I'm just saying, it's not a party opponent. He's trying to get in a statement from the defendant. Statements against interests. That the state, there is a difference between the state asking what the defendant said and the defense. And if they hadn't objected to some, they thought that's their prerogative. But they're trying to offer the defendant's statement in evidence without him taking the stand. I respectfully think that's objectionable as hearsay. He's the defendant on trial. They're offering it for the self-serving hearsay. They're offering it for the truth of the matter asserted. And I respectfully think that he's got to take the stand and get that information in.
And, Your Honor, maybe I'll make this sense. Did he tell you about talking to Swed that day?
No, sir, he did not.
Okay.
Your Honor, 801D2 allows us to ask the question and not the defense.
I don't understand what the self-serving is. She didn't say anything. He didn't say anything about Swed.
Your Honor, he could get his whole case through witnesses and he wouldn't have to take the stand.
Absolutely.
And that's not appropriate.
Fifth Amendment right,
no, sir,
to not take the stand.
Judge Newman interrupts the bickering attorneys and declares that the court will take a brief recess and that he will rule on the objection after the break. When the jury returns, Judge Newman announces that he is sustaining the prosecution's objection on the basis that the utterances of Alex Murdoch to Blanca Simpson would be inadmissible hearsay evidence. Defense Attorney Dick Harpudlian then resumes his cross-examination of Ms. Simpson.
So this conversation occurred, I think, did you say prior to them going to a golf tournament?
Yes, sir. He said Randy had just dropped him off so that he could get his clothes because they were him and Buster and Randy were going golfing.
Him and Buster and who?
Randy.
Randy, yeah. Okay. We're going to a golf tournament that weekend?
I don't know if it was a golf tournament or what, but I know he said they were going away. They were going golfing.
Okay. And speaking of Buster, can you point Buster out in the audience for me, please? Is that Buster?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Y'all always had a great relationship, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
He's
thank
a good
you.
Kid.
I'm sorry?
He's a good kid.
He's a good kid. Okay. So one of the other questions I have is, do you ever see Paul with any guns?
Yes, sir.
No?
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry. And did he have guns around all the time?
Yes, he did.
Matter of fact, they're all guns all over that place, right?
In the vehicles, on the go-karts, sometimes in the hangar.
So did Paul ever leave guns, just for instance, down at the hangar? Would he ever leave guns down there?
I have found one occasionally out there.
A pistol or rifle?
A rifle.
You know what kind it was?
No, sir.
Okay. Do you know if he ever left any down in the feed room?
Not in the feed room. I'm not sure about the feed
okay,
room.
You never saw anything in the
no,
feed
sir.
Room? I believe in one of your statements I read that sometimes he'd leave him somewhere and there'd be rust on the rifle or the shotgun or whatever.
If he left it on the golf cart outside, he would sometimes leave it laying across and I would get it in the morning and already the dew would, it would rust off.
And that would be a golf cart he would drive down to the kennels, for instance?
Yes, sir, whichever one he was in. And he preferred the gas. The gas one is usually where I used to find.
Gas?
Golf cart, yes.
Okay. And so that would be a way he would get down to the kennel sometimes?
Sometimes. The majority of the time he was either in Dolly or in his own truck.
In what?
Dolly.
What is Dolly?
The F-250.
I forgot. Y'all name all your trucks, or they named all their trucks, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so most of the time he would be in a truck, but sometimes he would take the golf cart, if you will, down there.
Yes, sir.
And apparently sometimes he had guns in the golf cart.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, let me touch a couple of other things. That day you saw the sled folks in there, did you see them taking any pictures, or do you remember?
I believe some of them were taking pictures, but I'm not positive.
Okay. You were shown a picture of a rain jacket?
Yes, sir, I was.
Okay. And had you ever seen that rain jacket at the house?
Not at Moselle, no, sir.
Right. And what size clothes did Alec wear?
2XL.
2XL, not just a large. Would anything a large fit him?
I don't think he might have had one or two items that were that size, but most of the clothing was 2XL.
2XL.
Dick Harpudlian next asks a member of his team to display a photo of an exhibit on the monitor for Ms. Simpson. The photo appears to be a large rain jacket.
You see that rain jacket on there?
Yes, sir.
You've never seen that, according to your statement, never seen that at
I've never seen that jacket.
Okay. And you knew pretty much everything, every piece of clothing that was there, right?
For the most part, yes.
Yes. Okay. And how many rain jackets did Alex have? You remember?
Too many to count,
okay. But none of them look like that.
No, sir.
Okay. How about blow that up for me, please? Can you make it any better? Closer? Yeah, that's good right there.
Another image appears on the courtroom monitors.
And that shirt is that the one he was wearing that morning?
No, sir, it was not.
It's not?
No, sir, that was not the shirt he was wearing.
And this is at 7, you understand, this is 7:40 p.m., that evening when he's out with Paul.
I wasn't there then.
Okay. But that's not the shirt he was wearing when he left that morning.
That is correct. That was not the shirt.
Dick Harpudlian takes a moment to confer with his defense team before moving on to his next question.
You were aware he had clothes at his office, kept clothes in his office?
Yes, sir, among other places.
Where else would he leave have
car.
Clothes? Car. He had it in a car?
Yes, sir.
Where else?
In Edisto.
Sorry?
In Edisto.
In Edisto. Okay. But if he was in the Moselle area, if he was going to change his shirt from in the morning, would he have changed it at the office or got something out of his car? You don't know?
I don't know.
Okay.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Defense Attorney Dick Harpootlian next hands Blanca Simpson a document.
Now, let me show you 107. Can you tell the jury what that is, please?
The text messages from me and Maggie.
Okay, this is on June 7th, 2021, right?
That is correct.
And the first one, she says, will you stop by? This is at 7:05 a.m. Stop by the store and get Alex Capri Sun. He likes orange and pineapple flavor plus mountain cooler. Thank you, I'll pay you back. You say, I will. He says, thank you, get $2. Now, after that conversation, there's a text at 3:28 p.m. Blanca, dinner's on the stove, just left. So you left there at about 3:30, correct?
Yes, I sent the text before I actually walked out of the house. I had a habit of sending her the text, make sure everything, and then locked up before I left. Okay. But at that time, I had gone upstairs to drop off some clothes, and I noticed that Paul's truck or a white truck was sitting at the kennels, so I left the front door unlocked at that time instead of locking it.
But you didn't see Alec anywhere there?
No, sir.
Okay. You didn't see his vehicle?
No, sir.
Okay. And she says at 3:40, thank you, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, then at 3:54, you said, you're welcome, I just made your deposit. Maggie then says, I guess this is a fun exchange. Thank you, I'm waiting at the doctor. Alex wants me to come home. I had to leave the door open at Edisto, but trust the Mexicans to shut and lock for me.
Yes, sir.
And then she says, Alex's dad back at the hospital. The last doctor claims not cancer, pneumonia. Alex is about to die. Hope he doesn't go down there to sleep.
What she meant, Maggie used to get frustrated. She said every time something happened at Alameda with his dad or his mom, that Alec would get called and nobody else, that they always called Alec to go to the house. And she did get upset over that, that the family was basically putting all that on Alec and he wasn't getting enough rest.
So when she said he's going to die, she's worried about his health.
She was worried about his health, yes.
Okay. And she says, Alex needs to take care of himself as well. And that's consistent with what you just said, correct?
She's yes.
Worried about his health.
Yes.
And you said, yes, he does. He told me he was tired when he left. I hope they can treat Mr. Randolph. Maggie says, I'm scared for him and Alex and all of us. What do you mean by that?
Because Alec hadn't had much sleep. That was her main concern, was the fact that her main frustration was the fact that in the middle of the night or whenever, you know, if Mr. Randolph or Miss Libby were uncomfortable, that they would always, she seemed to think that they always called Alec and there goes Alec, you know, to take care of it. And she felt that it wasn't fair that he was the only one having to take him.
And your response to that is, I know, just pray about it and hope he gets a little better. Is that what you said?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And you say, Alex and you really need to relax. Always being on the go with little or no sleep is not healthy. Remember, I have a doctor's appointment in the morning in Beaufort. If I get done early, I'll go to Moselle. I'll let you know. And she said, no worries, right?
Yes.
So she preferred to be in Edisto, correct?
That is correct.
But she was going that day, based on all your texts, she was going because Mr. Randolph had been put back in the hospital and she was worried about Alex, right? She was heading to Moselle. She preferred to be in Edisto, but she was heading to Moselle because Mr. Randolph had been put back in the hospital and she was concerned about Alex.
Prosecutor John Metters rises to object, presumably on the grounds that the question calls for the witness to speculate. Judge Clifton Newman sustains the objection and Dick Harpootlian rephrases his question.
She indicated to you that Paul was coming in your telephone conversations, correct?
That is correct.
And did she indicate in your telephone conversations that she needed dinner for her, Paul, and Alec, right?
Yes, she did.
And did she indicate in any way that she did not want to go to Moselle to have dinner with Alec, Paul that night?
Her conversation with me was that Alec wanted her to go to Moselle that day, and she was concerned about the workers that she had in Edisto, and she would have preferred to be in Edisto, taking care of the final
But for Mr. Randolph's condition.
She was concerned about the work being done and leaving the house open in Edisto.
She wasn't concerned about Mr. Randolph.
I mean, she was, but her concern, more concern, was that her house was open.
Okay. Now, she preferred to be at Edisto in the summertime as opposed to Moselle at all, correct?
That is correct.
Let me ask you, did Sled ask you at any point about the clothes that Alex was wearing on the 7th? At some point, did they ask you that?
Not until recent.
Recently, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And is it clear to you, I mean, you've been asked recently to recollect something that happened in June of 21, which is almost 2 years ago. Did they ask you other questions about what happened on June 7th when they asked you about the clothes?
They asked me where I was. They asked me what I was doing. They asked me when I saw Alec leaving that day, my discussions with Maggie. They requested to see my phone, which I gave them, so they could see the text messages, phone calls that we had had.
You and Maggie were very close.
We were.
You and Alec were close also, were you not?
Yes, sir.
And did you feel like a member of the family?
Yes, sir.
Did you indicate that Maggie, one of the things Maggie told you was that she was not, after the boat case, she was not being treated very well by the people in Hampton, correct?
That is correct.
They shunned her, they were rude to her, those kinds of things.
That is correct.
Did she also indicate to you that she was concerned about Paul because he'd received a bunch of threats?
Objection.
The objection was overruled.
Did she ever indicate to you she's concerned about Paul because Paul had received threats?
Yes.
Okay. That same morning of the 8th, did you clean the gun room?
I didn't go in the gun room. I went in there, but I didn't do anything in the gun room.
Didn't pick anything up?
No, sir.
Okay, and when you went into the kitchen that morning, was there anything that would indicate to you that other people had been there the night before, like glasses or bottles of water or anything?
No, sir.
Thank you.
With that, Dick Harpootlian concludes his cross-examination of Ms. Simpson. Prosecutor John Matters then begins his redirect of the witness.
Mr. Harpootlian asked you about the clothes in the closet on June 8, 2021. You remember?
Yes.
And he asked you if there could have been another shirt in the room.
Yes, sir.
And was your response maybe a T-shirt?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Did you see another dress shirt there?
No, sir.
And while we're getting to that, did you work at Almeda?
No, sir.
Did you ever go there?
No, I had been there on one occasion previously, and I don't remember what I had to drop off.
Well, that blue poncho rain jacket Mr. Harpootlian showed you, that was at Almeda, wasn't it? Or do you know?
I don't know where that came from.
But you never saw that at Moselle, right?
That is correct.
John Matters points to a monitor positioned in front of Ms. Simpson. The monitor displays a picture of a shirt.
And states 306, have you ever seen that shirt again since you went back the 8th, the 9th, until today? Have you ever seen that shirt again?
Once I moved a lot of the belongings to the little house, he had packed some of the clothes up. But over the weekends and stuff, when they were going from place to place, I noticed that he was purchasing different clothing items, shorts, shirts. So there was a couple of new ones in there, which still was not that shirt. It was some of the newer ones.
Who was purchasing a lot of shorts and shirts?
Alec.
After this event? After the murder?
Yes, sir. On the weekends when they were gone with the family, if he was going different places, he would come back like that Monday or Tuesday, and it was like new items within the clothes.
New shirts?
New shirts.
New shorts?
Yes.
Okay. You know what kind?
Vineyard vines.
They were vines? Vinny vines?
Yes, sir.
After the murders?
Yes, sir. They were like polo-type vineyard vines.
And what shirt had he suggested to you he was wearing in August on this day? What shirt had he suggested to you he was wearing?
Vineyard vines. Vinny vines is what you call them.
John Metters holds up another photograph for Ms. Simpson to review.
In State 7, said you recognize these shorts and shirts?
Yes, sir.
Where was this shirt kept on States 107 in Mosetta?
In the closet, if there was no room in that drawer.
On the shelves?
Yes, they're on the shelf.
And looking at 306, is that outfit different from this outfit?
Yes, sir, it is.
And I think it's all put me in choke at 107. Whose idea was it for Maggie Murdaugh to come to Mazelle on the evening of June 7th?
Dick Harpootlian stands and raises an objection.
You can testify if you know.
You don't have hearsay.
You can testify if you know.
Maggie texted me that Alec wanted her to come to Moselle.
And is that on 107 that Mr. Harpootlian had just put in?
Yes, sir, it is.
That's all. Thank you.
John Metters concludes his redirect, and Dick Harpootlian again rises for a brief recross of the witness.
After Maggie's death and Paul's death, did you notice he was losing weight?
Yes, sir, he was.
Dramatic loss of weight, right?
Yes, sir.
So the clothes we can see him in that picture. He's a fat is a long word, but overweight kind of guy, big guy, fleshy looking guy, right there. Okay. Now, so he needed to buy new clothes because the other clothes were falling off of him, right?
I assume so. Yes, sir.
So it wouldn't be unusual for him to need to buy new clothes because he's losing weight.
I guess.
Okay.
Dick Harpootlian motions to the photo already displayed on the monitor in front of Ms. Simpson.
Now, this is 306. This is the picture. And you say this is a shirt, like a Columbia shirt, right?
Yes, sir.
Now, a Columbia shirt, don't they have a logo that says Columbia?
Yes, sir. Either on the sleeve or...
See one on here?
I don't see anything on the shirt. The style of shirt is a Columbia style shirt.
That's not a. You're not saying it was a brand name Columbia shirt. You're saying it was a Columbia style shirt.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And your testimony again is this is not the shirt he walked out with that morning.
He did not walk out with that shirt that morning.
But those could be the khakis he walked out with that morning.
Possibly, yes.
And when you say you never saw that shirt again, you did see those khakis again, did you not?
Yes, sir, I washed those khakis. They were in the bathroom. I'm assuming it was the same pair because he only had a few that he wore.
Right, okay. And in addition, your testimony would be, well, I guess you're saying that morning he didn't have that shirt on, but he had those pants on.
Couldn't possibly have those pants. He had several.
Okay. And would you scroll down to the footwear, please? Okay. Those are loafers, right?
Yes, sir.
And what do they seem to be made out of?
Like soft leather.
So your testimony is that those were shoes he only wore around the house. He had like house slippers.
Usually when Alec would go outside, he had them Georgia boots that he would wear or the duck boots, and those would be left by the front door when I would walk through the door in the next morning.
In June, it was pretty hot down there in Moselle.
Yes, sir, but those were his go-to shoes when he would go outside or mess around, like he said, with Paul that day.
What kind of shoes was he wearing when he went to work that day?
The dress shoes, a pair of brown leather.
Now, when were you first asked about what he was wearing that day?
A couple of days when they interviewed me.
When they interviewed you the first time?
Yes, sir.
They asked you what he was wearing.
Yes, sir.
With that exchange, Blanca Simpson is released as a witness. Judge Newman calls for a lunch break, and we bring to a close this episode of Jury Duty, the trial of Alex Murdaugh. Please join us on our next installment as we review the testimony of Belinda Rast, a private home healthcare provider who worked with Alex Murdaugh's mother, Libby. we also begin our look at the testimony of FBI Special Agent Matthew Wild. Also, check out the Crime Story Podcast Night Raid, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you would like to listen to these episodes early and ad-free, head over to our Jury Duty Crime Story Patreon page.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You can find more information about this trial on our Jury Duty Crime Story Patreon page or at crimestory.com. Jury Duty is created and produced by Carrie and Tholis. It was co-produced, written, and edited by yours truly, Chris Terracone. Music for this episode was provided by Strike Audio. Trial audio is courtesy of Law & Crime Networks. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you will come back for the next episode of Jury Duty.